Tuesday, November 22nd, and this is Geek Nights. Tonight, we talk about how we completely screwed up the first half of this podcast. Alright, so the first 20 minutes of this podcast are gone.
Screwed up.
Yeah, Scott, in his infinite playing with his microphone, brushed the knobs on the mixer and turned my volume all the way up.
Hey, only part of the blame can go to me. Part of the blame also must go to the knob and the wire.
All right. But the point is, the first 20 minutes of our banter, which we cannot replicate because it is absolutely impossible to re-talk about something.
Yep. But it was good. But
it was good.
Rim was loud, and I was normal.
Yeah, I'm loud, clipping loud, and Scott is quiet. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of painful to listen to, but rather than deny you all the pleasure... we put it up completely unedited so that at least you get something out of it, and it's in a separate thing so we won't force it upon anyone.
Yeah, so if you really want to hear what we had to say, look in the comments on this week's podcast on the website and you'll see a link to the bad MP3.
So we're just going to jump right into our games bit because it's Tuesday and it's games day.
Yep.
So let's see, video game action.
Well, I picked up for $6, Soul Calibur 2.
I thought it was $12.
No, it was $6.
Oh my god, it used to be $17.
Yeah. I kind of balked at paying $6 at first.
Well, I wouldn't balk at $6.
And then I realized, hey, Soul Calibur, I like that game.
Yeah, it's an old game, but, you know.
It's my second favorite fighting game ever, second only to Bushido Blade 2.
I'm not a fan of the Bushido Blade, but...
That's just because you're not good at him.
It's like, even if I try to be good at him, it's just... Even if I was good... I mean, it's a great concept. You kill a guy with, you know, realness. Like, you hit him with a sword, he's dead. But it ends up not being really fun to play because it ends up just being kind of...
See, it is really fun to play among people who are good because it's ching, 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 ching. It takes about as long as a normal Soul Calibur battle.
No, I've actually seen people who are good, and the thing is that if you take two of the two best Bushido Blade guys in the world, one of them is just better than the other and goes, dead. And while that's very realistic, I mean, you know, for sword fighting, I guess, it's kind of boring and unfun.
And yet, you complain incessantly while we play Soul Calibur 2 about every aspect of that game.
Well, see, it's not so much the problems of Soul Calibur 2. In fact, Soul Calibur 2 is terrific in that it solves most of the problems of other fighting games. But the problem is that there are problems inherent in the fighting game, period. In every fighting game. And
I disagree. I think that fighting games as they are now are a genre. And what you want is in a completely different genre.
I don't think it's so much a completely different genre.
I think it'll be especially the stupid things you've been suggesting.
It's more like an evolution of the genre.
Wasn't one of your suggestions that you want the map to be infinite so you can run away and hide behind a door and then hit someone?
Yeah, sure, why not?
That's a different kind of game.
Why so?
Fighting game is a genre of generally two-dimensional, sometimes three-dimensional, but not really. It doesn't really matter. And it's just two people fighting. Two people engaging in various combinations of button pushing, one of which will become the victor.
Yeah. That's what it is fundamentally. But the way it translates on the screen isn't always 100%. And it kind of makes you go,
only you.
Well, like when I see my sword go through someone and it doesn't actually register a hit. Or when, you know, some guy... You know, swings his sword, like, just above the bad guy's head. It's like, all right, you could have lowered it a little bit, you know? It's just like...
Could have, but didn't. Remember, in a fight, you make a mistake. How many kung fu fights have you seen where the guy punches, and then the other guy, you know, dodges and grabs his arm?
But this isn't even, like, dodging. This is just, like, dumbness. And, like, other things, like, you know, it's like, you know when you're playing Half-Life, right? And you get this real immersion thing going on, but you don't feel like you're playing a video game. You feel like you're in Half-Life and you're Gordon Freeman, right? And then you see, like, some crate hanging off a crate in a non-possible way. Or you see a guy in Counter-Strike standing on top of a door. And you're like, all right, it's a video game. And it kind of takes you out, you know?
See, I guess I've never had that problem. I mean, when I get immersed in a game like Half-Life, I get immersed fully, and the game is consistent within itself.
That's just because Half-Life is really, really great at not messing that up.
Or even Counter-Strike. When I see a guy jumping on a door, that makes perfect sense in Counter-Strike world.
No, but it's like there's this feeling, and then it can be destroyed and broken by certain things in a game. And all fighting games seem to have this problem where, you know, it's not perfect.
You know what game doesn't? Bushido Blade. If the sword touches him, he's dead.
I guess that's true, but that game's not fun.
Oh! Revelation!
There's something we can do that's not Bushido Blade, that is not the standard fighting game, that is also fun.
Yeah, well, produce it then. Because you keep saying, oh, it can be done, but you never really come up with anything.
Because not even coming up with it is the hard part.
Not even coming up with solid concepts. I'm not saying make the game. I'm saying just make the concept, which you really haven't.
You control a guy. The guy can do any move. The other person is a guy
any
who can do
move.
Any move. Yeah.
How do you translate any move into a combination of button presses on a controller?
Well, the button presses we really abstract. So like A is punch. And depending on the position of your guy and the position of the enemy, the punch is determined.
Wait, so you mean you want it all to be determined by the game and not by what I do to the controller?
Well, no.
So
it's not determined by...
I hit A, and then my character does whatever punch is appropriate?
It's not whatever punch. It's not 100% just, you know, always he throws the perfect punch and it hits.
Then what?
There's more to it. It's
like what?
It would be a game more of positioning yourself because you know what punch he'll throw depending on what you're doing otherwise. Like, oh, I'll, you know, jump off the wall and I'll, you know, or I'll go through the window or climb up the ladder and drop down on him and throw a punch or something like that. Or wait till he ducks and then jump and throw a punch because I'll do a different move if that happens.
That doesn't sound any different than Soul Calibur.
Because
Soul Calibur, you see, oh, he's in that stance. He can do any of these moves. All right, I'll do this move that he won't be able to counter. And then, oh, but he
but it's a lot more complicated in the button pressing. You have to memorize all these button presses. And it's very complicated, and unless you're like a fight, you have to be a fighting game master to really.
Actually, what I've done, and I'm not great at the game, but I'm pretty good. Even though I only play Voldo, don't ask why. I'm terrible at most fighting games, but when I picked up Soul Calibur and I use Voldo, I'm pretty good. It's scary.
Voldo's scary.
Why Voldo?
I don't.
Why couldn't it been a cute girl? No, it's Voldo.
Hey, you should have picked a cute girl and never played Voldo.
I did. I played Raphael and all these people all the time, and I always lost. And then I played Voldo one time, and I started actually beating people a lot.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know the specific button combinations, but I have this general sense that I've picked up in my brain of, like, Voldo's standing a certain way, and you're standing there, and I just think to myself, I want to do a move kind of like this, and it just comes out.
Yeah.
It's all very, my brain, I don't specifically think. It's like when you're playing DDR, you don't think down, left, down, left, down, left, up. You just think, arrows are going in my eyes, and they're coming out my feet.
The problem is, generally, you want to make a game where the higher level of skill you have, then the more you will win. And the less skill you have, the more you will lose.
That's how fighting games are.
Soul Calibur, not really. The guy with less skill who button mashes can often beat people with slightly larger amount of skill or
slightly
a medium
larger
amount of skill.
That's effectively negligibly larger.
They can also beat people with a medium amount of skill. It's only the people insane fighting game skills that can win consistently.
See, I disagree because I don't think you have much evidence of that because none of us are good at Soul Calibur.
There are people who are good and they still, you know.
When was the last time we played with someone who was good?
I played against a crazy obsessive fanboy at an anime club social night, and all I did was button mash, and I beat him.
How do you know he was good?
Because he whooped like 10 people in a row.
That's not that scientific, you know.
Yeah.
Gonna be all James Randi. I'm gonna be all James Randi.
Alright, so I guess we're not gonna be able to settle this until we find the Soul Calibur 2 Grandmaster.
Yeah, yeah, and then see if he can beat my close my eyes and hit a bunch of buttons with Voldo technique.
And if he can't, I guess that's a problem. And if he can, alright. But, you know, the thing is, if you just smash buttons, you can beat people with a medium amount of skill, you know, who kinda know what they're doing, just because of the way the game works.
See, I don't see that so much. Most of the people I see the people who button mash, who I watched, tend to never win.
I button
or
mash
rarely
and I
win
very a lot.
You don't win that often.
What are you talking about?
It's more that you just don't give up the controller when you lose.
No,
and then you win again.
Excuse me. That's not it at all. Anyway.
Yeah. So we played a lot of board games this past weekend.
Oh, board games, I miss thee.
And I figured we'd just talk about all the board games we played because they're our favorite board games.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's gaming night, and there's no more video game
Well,
news.
We didn't play one of our favorite board games.
Yeah, but we're done with that game for now, kind of.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, you might have a... Mega Man 2 is the greatest video game, but you don't see me playing it too often. It's a little played out. Puerto Rico's the same way.
Puerto Rico.
It's so great, but it's kind of played out. And there's no two-player, so...
And we really got no more video games to talk about, unless you want us to talk more about Mario Kart, which we're playing incessantly.
I got some good time trial action going on now. I'm going to pretty much do time trials and online play from now on, considering I beat all the GPs with gold. So the board games. We started out with a little teeny.
Tigris and Euphrates, which is currently my favorite board game.
Yeah, definitely currently the hot game to play. I can play it pretty much all night, and I don't think I get tired of it without like 100 more plays.
See, Tigris and Euphrates is a very open game, and there is, other than the tiles you draw in your hand, which is just an aspect of the game, there is absolutely no randomness whatsoever. Anything that happens in the game was caused by another player directly.
Of course, you know, the what tiles you draw is kind of random and kind of really important. But
except
it's the only thing. It is the only thing.
And you're the only one who's ever complained about not getting the tiles you needed.
I'm not lying. I swear to God, beginning of the game, I drew one red tile. On the very last tile I drew out of the bag was my second red tile.
You could have.
I know. I could have thrown out all my tiles and drawn six new ones, right? But I just don't feel good doing that.
Eh? Well, great. That was great for me.
Yeah, I won the first game, though. Pretty good, yeah. Too.
I won the second game handily.
Yeah.
By an order of magnitude.
I just ran for those monuments and bam. It's nice. I'm like how we used to never put out the monuments. Or maybe we'd put out a monument and then fight over it ferociously. And now, like, every monument comes out. It's crazy.
So T&E is a very open game. Basically, you place tiles on a board. And you can place them anywhere on the board, pretty much. Mm. And you have little leaders. You can place them anywhere. And you're building little kingdoms and fighting with each other over monuments and victory points. And the game has a really cool gimmick. Every game that we like has some kind of gimmick. It's like you describe the game and you're like, yeah, but what's the gimmick? And then someone says the gimmick and you go, ooh.
Mm.
This game's gimmick is there are four different colors of victory points that you get. And your final score is... the lowest of the four that you have.
It's the most least. That's how you win, is you have the most of the least color of point. So, if you got 3 green, 10 red, 10 black, and 10 blue, and the other guy has 4 of everything, he wins because your score is 3, because your most least is 3.
Yep.
The other guy, he's got 4, so, ha. Huh. You could also think of it as getting sets. Like, how many sets do you have? But it's technically the most least.
Well, technically they both work.
Well, yeah, but if there's a tie for most least, you look at the second lowest, so that's not sets. It's...
No, all you do in that case is you eliminate your lowest color, then you do sets again.
That's true.
Anyway, we also played a lot of, a little bit, not so much, St. Petersburg.
St. Petersburg is good, but I don't see a lot of a variation in the game.
It's a really fun game. It's basically a growth management game. You buy workers to get money, and then you use the money to get victory points, and you have to balance money and victory points throughout the whole game.
Yep.
It's pretty much perfect, except for one glaring problem whereby if one of the big aristocrats comes out...
The judge.
The judge or the mistress comes out in the first round, whoever buys it pretty much wins automatically.
Yeah, but the thing is sometimes if the guy plays poorly... I think there's the one balancing against that is if you buy a Kremlin the first turn, you stand to get a lot of points out of that Kremlin.
Not really.
Well,
buying a Kremlin the first turn is almost always suicide.
It's because you lose all this money. But the thing is if then one of the big Jews, the big aristocrats comes out, we call them the Jews.
Yeah.
Scott, if you're not silly with a German board game, don't even bother playing.
Yes, we are silly. I mean, they are workers, buildings, aristocrats, and upgrades. But we call them workers, or I don't know, proletarians, or we make jokes about
capitalism. We call them workers, but yeah.
Yeah. And then we got Kremlins because the icon is shaped like a Kremlin. Because
it's a Russian game, St. Petersburg. Yeah.
And the upgrades, just squares.
Yeah, and the Jews are the aristocrats.
Yep.
Because the tile that represents them is this pointy nose guy.
And I'll point out that Scott here is Jewish, so.
Yeah, we're
so
not.
So it's okay.
We're not anti-Semites. We're just.
Hey, Jerry.
Racism
see these
is
eggs
funny
are overcooked? It's anti-Semitism.
Racism is funny when it's not real.
Nah.
And it's just words.
NASA.
NASA.
Sorry, that is definitely an inside joke.
It is coal. So, the problem I have with St. Petersburg is that it's a lot of fun to play, but there's not a lot of variation. It's pretty much, you know, you buy workers, you buy Kremlins.
You yeah,
buy,
once you know. Get down to it, the game becomes, it's no longer a game of playing the game. It's a game of either odd evening, which is you take a card now to ensure that you will be able to get a card in the next phase, or I don't take a card now to make sure that my opponent does not get a card in the next phase.
Yep.
Or the only other real aspect is, when do you turn from making money to making victory points? And whoever does it first, but not too early, will win.
Yeah, if you do it too early, you won't have enough money and you'll be stuck. But if you do it too late, the other guy gets more victory points than you because he bought something a turn earlier and it ended up generating him more points.
It's a good beginner to intermediate game and it's really fun and we still play it, but it'll get old.
It will get old. The other thing is I noticed that a lot of other board game people, when I hear them talk about board games, they seem to only play a game like a few times a year.
God,
and we see
when we bought
also,
Puerto Rico,
but they also play a lot more games in total. They have just a huge variety.
Yeah,
we
but a lot
to
of games
play
are crap.
A few games, a whole lot,
because we only buy the best games and then we play them out.
Yep.
Like when we bought Puerto Rico, the three of us played Puerto Rico one weekend. We played it like 15 times in one day. We just played it constantly.
It was great.
Like, we'd play it, someone would win, we'd sit there for a second, we'd argue for a while about, oh, you won because of this, oh, blah, 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 oh, I didn't notice that.
Yep.
And then we'd just play again, and again, and again, and again, and one of us would go to work and come back and play again.
Those are good days. Good days.
And we still do that. Whenever our friends come over, we play board games pretty much nonstop.
We just make a stack, we play the top right to the bottom.
Yep. Some games get neglected now, like Settlers, but
it's going to be all good. There isn't a game store around anymore. Well, there is, but it's not so good.
No, it's no Millennium.
Yeah, but I am going to go there this weekend because supposedly there's going to be some gamers there, and I'll try to get a game on with them. Maybe I can get some more consistent games on with them, and because we need players.
Yeah.
But we don't have a game store that sells a high quantity of the and selection of the German games that we like. So finally I decided to bite the bullet, and I bought some games online at this website, GameFest.com. It's a good website. They had a whole big selection of games, and they told you how many of each they had in stock left. And a lot of the games were either out of stock or they had single-digit numbers of copies. So I imagine it's just a game store somewhere that has a nice website. There was another one that had a good website, funagain.com. They seemed like, pretty much equal. Like, it was completely arbitrary which one I bought from. And the thing that made me choose GameFest was the site was a little bit cleaner, a little bit more trustworthy looking, and the price was like lower by $1 on one game. So, yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah. But of course, I'm driving to Rochester this weekend. I'll definitely be stopping at Millennium, which is one of the biggest game stores in America.
Might be the biggest.
Yeah. I'm going to get me some board games.
It's definitely the best that I've ever been to or seen.
Yep.
Of course, there is one in the city somewhere. I just have to find it. I'm going to go to it one of these days. Maybe I'll go Friday. I don't know.
Huh?
I'll think about it.
We also played some Alhambra.
Alhambra's
it's always
great.
A good game.
Deserving its spiel this year.
It's a bidding game and a tile placement game. Not a tile laying game, but a tile placement game.
It's not really bidding. More of a take money, buy stuff.
Yeah. But if you keep track of the money people are drawing in their hands.
Which is very easy to do. It's like, oh, look, Rim took all the blue money. I wonder what he wants. Oh, could it be that tile that's on the blue space?
This game has a gimmick like every game, and the gimmick is you don't get change back when you buy something.
So if something costs 10 and all you have is 2 9s, guess what? If you want to buy it right now, you got to spend the 2 9s and you don't get 8 back.
Yep.
But
the other gimmick is if you do buy something with exact change, you get another action.
That is very powerful. Yep. People who basically the winner is the person who both buys things that are that they need while also saving money and not buying useless things and buying everything as much as possible with exact change in order to get free turns.
Though you can't forget buying the things other people need to deny them points.
Of course.
It also has a nice mechanic where games where ties can occur within the game have a numerous ways of dealing with that. Some games are everybody loses, meaning if there's a tie, you either no one gets anything or you divide up everything like among the winners.
Mm-hmm.
And Alhambra is one of those. So say first place is something's worth 15 points and second place is worth 6 points. If three people tie for first place, they divide 15 points by 3. And then the second place person actually gets more points than the first place person.
Yeah, it basically, if that mechanic right there is what makes it a multi-person game. Without that mechanic, it's basically just a race to see who can get the most points in the least amount of time based on the random coming out of tiles and coming out of money cards.
Yep.
That mechanic actually forces you to look at what other people have when deciding what tiles to buy. If first and second place are already locked in, it's really a waste of money to spend things on the third place to get a tile to tie for third place when you could, you know, wait for the next tile to come, buy that, and get something other color.
Yep, unless you're a rival, you can tie him in something to take points away from him, or there's mm-hmm. a bunch of things you can do.
There is, of course, one thing that, you know, always kind of messes you up in the game is that if you keep looking at the colors, deciding what tiles to buy and what not to, you kind of ignore the walls. You have to pay attention to the walls, too. You might not need a tile, but if it has good walls on it and it fits nicely in your Alhambra, you can get a bunch of extra points from it. So you don't want to, like, you know, leave anything out with more than, you know, one wall on it,
yeah.
Unbid.
Our friend Pete has a problem. Whenever he builds an Alhambra, he tends to wall himself in completely, and then he's screwed.
Yeah, you got to build the Alhambra nicely. A lot of times, there'll be, like, the perfect tile, but nowhere to put it in your Alhambra. Then you're done. Forget it.
Now, it's a great game, but the box lies when it says it's 2 to 6 players. It's 3 to 6 players. If you play with 2 players, it adds this, like, deterministic player named Matt.
It's like playing blackjack.
It's terrible. Don't play
it. You always
player.
Know what dealer's going to do. You always know what Matt's going to do. Yeah. Matt never wins unless you're dumb.
Yeah, the first time we ever played, Matt almost beat us.
It's kind of like playing Risk with that neutral army out there. Only worse.
Of course, we played, I mean, this was a game where everybody loses in ties. We played another game where everybody wins on a tie. Amon Re.
Oh, it's a fun game.
It's probably my second favorite game right now.
I realize that most of our games are Rainier Kinesia games.
They're awesome games.
He is. He's a great game maker.
Amon Re is a really neat mechanic as well. It's a diminishing returns, buy things, bid, but bid in a weird way by sacrificing things to the gods or stealing from the gods.
Stealing from the gods was very key.
But the mechanic here, the gimmick is that you build a bunch of stuff on the board, and you play the game all the way through, and you score. Then the flood comes and wipes everything out except the pyramids that everyone has built, and you lose everything you have other than that. Everything on the board goes away. Then you play the whole game again, and the board starts the way it ended at the previous round.
It's really cool because what ends up happening is in the first round, play is obvious. It's easy to tell which ones are the best and which ones aren't the best to go for. And you can just bid on the best provinces, and you know how much money you have and how much you can afford to bid. And everyone gets exactly what they deserve based on the order of play and such. But in the second round, you know, some guy who didn't spend a lot of money for his province that he didn't pay for in the first round built like 2 pyramids on it. And now in the second round, someone has to decide between a good province with maybe 1 pyramid and a crappy province with like many, many pyramids.
Yep. I've often found my strategies lean towards, if I have a choice, if I have a crappy province while I'm playing in the first round, I'll put all my pyramids there and screw someone in the next round.
I basically try to get the best province I possibly can every time.
Based on
what I can afford.
So, I try to win every game that I play.
What can I do besides go for the best province possible?
Yeah.
And the thing is, the way the bidding works is it's like you can't fake out and bid on something crappy and then move to something good. You have to pretty much go for what you're going to go for.
Yeah, if you're going to fake someone out, you have to be devious in it.
It's real hard to fake someone out. You'd have to go for, like, the second best province at a low price, hope that someone outbids you, and then go to the best province at a higher price.
Yeah. The bidding is definitely fun because you can sacrifice to the gods or you can steal from the gods' temple and get money.
Yeah. I think that the problem is that if everyone, depending on the provinces that come out, that determines if people are going to steal or bid to the gods. And I remember in early games, we used to bid to the gods a lot and it would go way up. But now everyone seems to kind of screw the gods and steal all their money.
Which is great because that means I give to the gods and the gods give me nice things.
Yep. Then I also give to the gods. I remember one game I just got first place every time and everyone else kept stealing it all.
Yeah, yeah.
I won that game pretty easily. But I think that if we played a game where, you know, different tile, the order of tiles came out to where that everyone wanted to give more to the gods, that we'd see a crazy high point scoring game as opposed to the low point scoring games we have now.
Yeah, though we had them, it changes. We haven't played the game much lately.
Yeah.
Because we don't own it. Our friend who lives far away owns it.
That's good, because that way we won't get played out.
Yeah. We also played a lot. We played some Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh, my God.
We were sitting around, and we realized all of us really wanted to play D&D and hadn't played in a long time. So we forced our old Dungeon Master to think up a game. So he forced us to roll up characters while he thought up a game, and then we played a game.
It was most excellent.
We stayed up like 4 in the morning playing, and then we finished it the next day.
It probably wasn't the best, you know, campaign I was ever in, ever.
It wasn't a campaign. It was a one-off.
Yeah, still, whatever, but it wasn't the best D&D I played in my whole life, but because it was such a drought, it's like, you know, dirty water at the end of a desert is as good as cold water.
Plus, I got to admit, our Dungeon Master Alex came up with one hell of an adventure for, you know, zero preparation and a bunch of people demanding he run a game.
Yep, very good.
My only regret is that I made a character and I had all this stuff set for him, and I basically ended up just playing Mal from Firefly.
Yeah, Firefly I don't like.
Firefly is awesome.
Whatever.
You suck.
I was a paladin. Whee! And I realized it's hard to roleplay someone who's all paladin-y when you're really, in real life, the opposite of paladin.
Oh, yeah. Let's see. We're going to a village to do some sort of semi-secret business, and the paladin walks in and says, "Yo, unto ye villagers, I am a paladin, and I am here to blah, 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 blah."
Isn't that what paladins do?
No. Some paladins aren't stupid.
Oh, well, I only had an intelligence of 10.
That'll do it.
10 is actually average, so.
Yeah, average.
I was as smart as what the villagers were. My wisdom was 15, though, so, you know.
Uh-huh.
I think it was part of that was because I didn't quite know how to be a paladin, and I kind of know a little better now.
Yeah.
And part of it was because it was way late at night, and the next...
We stopped playing at 4 in the morning only because you were asleep.
Yeah, when we played the next day,
I gotta admit,
did a much better job of paladining.
You were much better the next day. Your character was actually somewhat intelligent and did useful things and actually had things to say that weren't silly.
I think the next time I'm a paladin, I'm not gonna try to be all evangelical gaudy as much as, like, heroic saving. I'll try to be more heroic saving, you know. Well, not saving throws, saving others. With my powers. Yay, paladins.
We also played some Carcassonne.
Carcassonne's okay, but
it's a quick fun
game. I understand why there's a bunch of expansions for it.
Yeah, we've kind of played it out. And you don't seem to learn that you can't beat me in the farmer game.
You know,
every time we've ever played, you see me build a farmer, and you get it into your head that you can somehow get more farmers than me. And
you've
never
done it. You know,
I put
the farmer down first in the best spot, and it ended up being the whole board. And, this time, you didn't completely dominate the farmer game as in previous times.
Except I got more points from farmers than anyone else.
Well, you see, what the problem here was that farmers really get you 4 points per city thing, right? It's that I didn't have enough guys on the board. I did good enough in the farmer game to win. I just didn't get anything else. I didn't get any roads. I didn't get enough cities, And part of it is what tiles you draw, and especially in that many players in a game with no expansions, you don't get so many tiles in the game to put guys on. So you kind of have to put a guy on every tile.
I realized right away that I had to jump on any point thing I drew because I wouldn't draw as many tiles.
I didn't realize that till later. But now I know that if I'm playing with not any expansions and so many people, I have to start putting my guy on every tile I put down pretty much. You know, whereas in two players, you have to be very discerning about where you put your guy because you might not get him back.
Yeah.
It's a completely different game with different numbers of people.
We also played some WarioWare.
WarioWare.
Yeah.
It's not so exciting to talk about.
Yeah, it is. I love that game.
Yeah, it's all right. You know, but... Yeah. It's getting kind of played out for me.
Yeah.
Mostly because I haven't seen any new mini games in it. You know, and a lot of them are the same, just with a different picture.
Yep. That, we played some of that, the Pac-Man game for the GameCube.
Pac-Man game is very good.
Where one guy has the Game Boy, and they're playing Pac-Man, and the other three people are ghosts, and they can't see where Pac-Man is.
Yeah, the Pac-Man game is very good, but I can only play it a few times a night. But then, and you know, at another night, I can play it again.
Yeah.
It's well, like once you play it a few times in a row, you're done. But then if you bring it back out again later, it's good.
See, I can play it all night, but part of that's because I win a lot. I mean, once I get Pac-Man, I just clear the board over and over.
Depends who the ghosts are. If the ghosts are really good, they can get you. But if the ghosts aren't so good...
Yeah, the thing is, if the ghosts are not so good, I clear the board. But if the ghosts are actually really good, I usually get more points because while I don't clear the board because they eventually get me, I eat them because they're aggressively going after me. And then I get more points.
You know, I remember when we played it previously, Pac-Man would switch around a whole lot. When we played it this weekend, it didn't seem to switch around so much. I think a lot of people were clearing the board, and I think it was a difference in the ghost strategy. And, you know, people were trying to camp power pills, and they were trying to eat the fruit a lot.
Well, that was me. I was the only one eating the fruit, and that's how I win every game. That's my secret. I get enough points with Pac-Man to stay ahead, and then I let people who aren't going to win be Pac-Man while I just eat the fruit over and over.
Yeah, I eat the fruit over and over also, but, you know, sometimes it's a race to the fruit. What can you do?
Well, I always win it because I'm always closer to the can.
I got the fruit plenty of times. Just But, you know, the game, it's good. It's interesting. The price is right on it, you know, or at least was when it was out. It was pretty much free.
The sad thing is that it's the only good thing in that game because when you buy it, it comes with this other Pac-Man game.
Well, when it originally came out, you would get it if you bought, like, any game on this list. It would be free. And... then when that promotion was over and they ran out of the free discs on their own, the only way to get it is to buy Pac-Man Adventure Land something.
It's the worst game ever.
Yeah, that's the worst game ever, but it comes with the Pac-Man verse in the same package.
We pulled it out and turned it on to see if it could actually be as bad as we'd heard, and it was worse.
I played it for maybe 10 seconds, and you know, I was Pac-Man, and it was 3D, and I was walking around eating pills and pellets, and there was like a ghost... and it was like an Adventureland kind of... Oh, my God, it was terrible. After, like, I played it for 5 seconds, and I wanted to kill myself, so I stopped playing. Why do people make games like that thinking they're going to be fun?
I don't know.
I don't know what they're thinking.
Why would Nintendo let them release that game?
Nintendo will let you release things as long as, you know, they're not full of bugs and they work. They don't...
it's got one bug. It's got one glaring bug. It's terrible.
Yeah. But, you know, Nintendo doesn't judge the content of games when they release them. Which, you know, they didn't do for the NES either.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, no one really seems to do it these days. If I had a console, I would make sure the only games out for it were crazy awesome. But
yeah, but then there'd be some Tengen games appearing.
Yeah, that'd be a problem. You know, especially when people start saying, oh, your system doesn't have a lot of games for it. What does it have? These three games. And, you know, sure, I could point out, well, look at your system. What does it have? These three games and a pile of crap. But there are people who buy the crap. That's why it exists. And yeah,
mostly parents who know their kid liked a movie, so they buy the game that went along with the movie.
You'd be surprised who buys those games with movies. Actual people who buy them like they want to play them.
Wow,
it's scary. The people who buy these non-awesome games, like it's really frightening. Like, remember we saw that kid in GameStop or wherever, and he ran over to the DS rack. And, like, he was excited, and he was going to get a game that he knew he wanted.
Oh, yeah.
And he got Rayman. I mean, come on, kid. Get freaking Mario Kart. Get Advance Wars. Get any of the other 10 awesome games of the DS. Why are you getting Rayman? It's a boring, generic, nothing new, you know, platform game that has seen, like, 10 remakes, none of which were good.
Way to piss on that kid's parade.
His parade is thoroughly drenched in yellow urea.
Yeah, we're crotchety old men when it comes to video games.
And you know what? Crotchety old men are right.
Nah.
Especially like those Muppet Show old men. They know what's up.
So I think that's every game we played.
Yeah, we didn't play San Juan.
We played a couple of other video games that you guys don't care about.
I don't know if we played another board game or not, but it doesn't matter.
Nah, we didn't.
All right, cool. So, yeah, I guess the first part of the podcast messed up.
Yeah, and yeah.
Yeah, but I think this one should be good enough on its own.
Yeah, we went a little long on the video game part to cover the fact that the rest of it was done. That's it was fine. Okay, because while we had good stuff to talk about, it was mostly us dredging the bottom of the news pile because there was not much news that really we wanted to talk about.
Yeah, and the things of the day are in there, then those are messed up, but we'll still put the links in the things so you can see what they were.
Yeah, yeah. To sum up, my thing of the day is a device that gives you an artificial Nintendo finger.
My thing of the day was a French book from 1844 that said, if you masturbate, you will die horribly. It had illustrations that were hilarious.
Ha ha.
All right. I think that's it.
Is that it?
We out.
And that was Geek Nights with Rim and Scott. Special thanks to DJ Pretzel for the opening music.
Thanks for listening. Please remember to point your favorite podcatcher at feeds.feedburner.com/geeknights to get the latest episodes as soon as they're released. Also, please visit our website at www.frontrowcrew.com for the latest updates and forum discussions. And whether you love or hate our podcast, we won't know unless you send your feedback to us at geeknights@gmail.com.